So, several years ago, Sally and I started to ride on the trail, did trail rides on our bikes, bicycles, Doug, bicycles. And one of the places we went down to Turkey Hill to ride the Enola Low Grade, the Turkey Hill to Safe Harbor, 5.5 miles each way. And we went down Blue Rock Road. And where Blue Rock Road hits 441, on the right, we noticed they were starting to build what looked like an outbuilding. It was framed. It had all the joists up. It had the base of the building. You can tell how technical I am, right? Kevin, you love this, right? And we thought, oh, well, let's track this. So that was about 7 years ago. They still haven't done anything to it since that first time we went by. Except now there are bushes and weeds and trees growing out of it, covering it. It's disappearing. How many of you have that list at home of to-dos? That thing, those things that, you know, I just haven't got around to it yet. I just didn't get to it yet. I remember once I had paint the bathroom on my list for 6 months. And after 6 months, I said to myself, I'm not going to paint the bathroom. Imagine that you have that list of things that you would just love to get done but haven't been able to get done. I thought about that today, you know. I thought, okay, so what if I started this sermon and said to myself, okay, so I have this good intention, but I'm not going to do anymore. I'm going to sit down now because I started it. No, it doesn't work that way. So why does this matter? Why does this chapter matter? Why does this part of Paul's letter matter to us? First of all, there's over 2,300 Bible verses about money, wealth, and possessions. And 11 of Jesus' 39 parables speak about money. So there's something about money that we've got to talk about. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. How is your relationship with money impacting your relationship with God? That's the question we want to put in front of you today. How is your relationship with money impacting your relationship with God? So in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we've been talking a lot about these accusations that the false teachers have made against Paul. So I thought it'd be interesting to go into the letter and see what are these false accusations they made. So the first thing they said was, you're selling God's word. You're profiting off of God's word. You're selling God's word. That you can't be trusted because you changed your trip itinerary. You were going to come twice, but now you're just going to come once. That you're stealing money from the Jerusalem offering and pocketing it. That you're a bad preacher. That you're not being as spiritual and holy as we are. You're not a real apostle. And that you're in league with Satan. Now, how would you feel if a whole congregation, a whole gathering of people were accusing you of that? I'd be, see you later. I'd be out of there, right? But not Paul. Paul stands firm against this stuff. But this is important to keep in the background of your understanding as we go into this today. Jesus warned about false teachers. He said, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but are inwardly ravenous wolves. Going to chew you up. John Piper says, Christians should be discerning and alert to behavior and teaching that dishonors Christ and destroys people and not treat it in a casual way. You see any false teaching today? You see any false preachers today? There are plenty of them out there. They're not speaking the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're speaking the gospel of the world, the gospel of money, the gospel of them. So these false teachers distracted the Corinthians. And they were saying things to themselves like, why should we trust Paul based on these accusations? Why should we trust him? Can't you see the little groups that would form and say, do you believe this guy? He's asking for money. He's asking us to give money to him, and he's stealing the money. Why should we give our hard-earned money for others? We earned it. There was a guy I worked with years ago. He was a multimillionaire. He had more money than I ever saw anybody have before. And I asked him once, I said to him, so, what are you doing to make a difference in the world? His answer, I got mine. Let them get theirs. I was flabbergasted, and not long after that, I found another client. What if we end up needing it for ourselves? What if we give all our money away and we need it for ourselves? And what if we don't have enough? Well, those are all things that were to distract them from trying to complete the offering. But this collection for Jerusalem, what was that? What was this collection? So, before Paul and Barnabas went on their journey, they met with the Jerusalem church leaders, Peter, James, John. And these church leaders ask only one thing, that we remember the poor, which is actually what I was eager to do. That's what Paul writes in Galatians. He says, I wanted to make sure that we were going to give to the Jewish people, the poor Jewish people, what we could give them to support them, because they had given us so much with the faith. So there were rich and poor. Rich people were those who were abundantly supplied with money, resources, and possessions. Now, isn't that funny? Abundantly supplied with money, resources, or possessions. Not just money. It's resources. It's possessions. It's relationships. We can be rich. I heard a farmer once, now this is where, remember, I go into dangerous territory when I start talking about farming. But I heard a farmer once say he was, see if I get this right, he was land rich but cash poor. Right? Poor has little or no money and few or no material possessions. Someone who must beg to survive. That's poor. You have to beg to survive. And then Paul, you might remember, reminds us in Philippians, my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Jesus Christ. Every need that we have is supplied by God. Not every want, but every need. There's a distinction. Now Paul has this Macedonian argument. And before we talk about this, we have to understand that the Macedonians and the Greeks were long-standing political rivals. Kind of like Dallas and Philadelphia in football, okay? Or Hemphill and Columbia. Maybe it's a better one. Hemphill and Columbia. I remember when Hemphill was formed, when they consolidated schools, Columbia was supposed to be part of that school district. Because kids across the street from Columbia High School actually go to Hemphill. But the people in Columbia said, no way. There's no way we'll ever do, they're our arch rivals. We'll never be red and black. We'll always be crimson and gold. Right? So I want you to understand that's the kind of relationship going on between the Macedonians and the Greeks. The Greeks were like us at Hemphill, and the Macedonians were like the poor people in Columbia. All right? And Paul says, God gave his grace to the Macedonian church. He says, you know, the Macedonians, even though they're going through a hard time, the most severe trial, persecutions that left them in extreme poverty, even though they're going through all this stuff, even though they're doing it, the persecution hasn't taken away their joyfulness. They're still joyful. And their poverty didn't diminish their ability to be generous. Even the Macedonians, in their extreme poverty, are giving money for the collection in Jerusalem. Remember, James says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials. Now think about that. That was a beautiful psychological trick that Paul was playing, right? He's saying, well, even the Macedonians are giving money. Well, who do those Macedonians think they are? Well, we should give our money too. I'd be glad to take it, right? Poverty and persecution leads to joy and generous giving. Paul tells us these Macedonians gave as much as they were able. They gave entirely on their own. They gave themselves first to the Lord and to Paul, and their actions proved their genuine faith. Their actions proved their genuine faith. Faith without action is dead, right? Faith without action is dead. And then he says, as it is written, and he goes back into Exodus, and he gives us a little bit of a reminder of the Israelites in the wilderness and the manna from heaven. The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much manna, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Paul's reminding the Macedonians and the Greeks, the Corinthians, that God will provide for them. Then Mitch read this passage from Matthew about the poor woman who gave the 2 copper coins, showing that it's not about how much you give, it's about the intent behind your giving. And Jesus is the example. First of all, Jesus, though rich, became poor. He had to beg to survive. He had to beg to survive. Jesus never had a house. He never had a condo. He never had a bed. He never had a closet. He had clothes on his back, and that was it. He was at the complete mercy and grace of the people of the time that could provide for him. He says in Matthew, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of God has no place to lay his head. I just can't imagine what that must have been like. The only person I've ever read about who comes close to that in our world is Mother Teresa. When Mother Teresa died, they put all of her worldly belongings into a small box, and that was it. That's all she had. Through his poverty, Paul says, we could become rich. And how might the Corinthians follow Christ's example? How might their giving lead to stronger walking in the shoes of Jesus Christ? Then he says, then there will be equality if we do this. Ooh. That's a word that sometimes I think we shrink back from. We are Americans, so we believe that all men are created equal. All people are created equal. But I would like to make sure I'm a little more equal than the next guy. Right? I'm not sure that equal thing would fly today. I think some people might look at this statement and say, oh, so Jesus was a communist. He was a socialist. No, Jesus was Jesus Christ. So, Eugene Peterson writes in the Gospel, his beautiful version in the Message, he writes it this way. He says, your heart's been in the right place all along. You've got what it takes to finish it up, so go to it. Once the commitment is clear, you do what you can, not what you can't. This isn't so others can take it easy while you sweat it out. No, you're shoulder to shoulder with them all the way. Your surplus matching their deficit. Their surplus matching your deficit. In the end, you come out even. Because why is that, brothers and sisters? Because at the end, we all come out even. When we're in that hospital bed or in that bed at home and we breathe our last breath, we're equal with everybody else. There isn't anybody that I know of that takes the trailer to the graveyard with them to take all the money along, right? We're all equal when it comes to that. Now, Paul sends Titus to finish the work. Titus. So Titus had established a relationship of trust and affection with the Corinthians a year earlier when he came and talked to them about this special offering for the Jerusalem church and the people in poverty. And Paul praised his devoted concern for them. He said he was eager to help with relief offering, and it's his own ideas, not Paul's. So he's trying to make a point here based on those early accusations we looked at. He's trying to say, this guy, you know, is reliable. You trust him. There haven't been any accusations against him. I'm sending him, and he's going to give you an opportunity to engage in an act of grace. And then he goes on and says, we want to avoid any criticism. We want to avoid any criticism. So I've had enough criticism, he says, so I'm being very careful about how we do this. The first thing is, the brother who is praised by all the churches for his service to the gospel is going to come. And in the commentaries I could look up, I found that this was probably Luke or Barnabas, chosen by the churches, selected by a vote. It was either Luke or Barnabas, one of the two. And then he talks about our brother who has often proved he's zealous. We don't know who that is, but we know that it's somebody who showed up. And finally he says, our brothers who are representatives of the churches, who were Christians of outstanding faithfulness, duly elected delegates of the churches at large, who couldn't be dismissed as Paul's chosen cronies. So he's being very careful here to say, I'm setting this up for you to finish the work, to complete the offering, so that I'm going to send two guys and a group of guys to come who are without flaws, without criticism, without exception, men of high integrity. So what kept the Corinthians from finishing their work? Well, first of all, I think they were focused on themselves. I think they were self-centered. I think they thought more about themselves than they thought about others. They were influenced by rumors and false accusations. Aren't you glad that doesn't happen today? Many may not have believed in equality. My son Kyle, when he graduated from college, he went to Penn State to be an aerospace engineer. And his junior year, he called me and said, Dad, I'm changing my major. Oh, I said, what are you changing to? He said, I want to be a youth pastor. I said, great. So he graduated with a degree in communications and found a job as a youth pastor at a church in Camp Hill. And after about a year, he called me one night and he said, Dad, he said, I just came out of a meeting where they told me that the people who give the most money have the biggest voice. The people who give the most money are the ones we have to listen to what they say. What do you think? I said, well, what do you think? He said, I'm going to quit tonight. I said, I think that's probably a good idea. But he hasn't been back to church since then. And it's, I think, 15 years. We don't know what harm we can do with people, right? What our own self-centered inner beliefs can do. And it hurts generations of people. Maybe their emotional states influence them. Because our emotions are interpretations of what we love or worship. And remember, if we love money, we can't love God. If we love one, we're going to hate the other. If we respect one, we're not going to respect the other. So their emotions kept them from finishing. Can you see that sometimes? That your emotional state keeps you from finishing the work that's important for you to finish? You're exhausted, you're tired, you're angry, you're resentful, you're resigned, you're anxious. And there was a lack of grace. Paul says, you excel in faith, speech, knowledge, complete earnestness and love. You excel at this stuff. And then he says, now excel at the grace of giving. Put it all together. And they love money maybe more than God. And I think sometimes that's what we face too. So what would help? Well, Paul, in this part of the letter, these 20-some verses, lists these emotions that show up. Isn't that funny? Love, joy, grace, eagerness, enthusiasm, zeal. This is what helps with your giving. This is what helps you prepare to extend God's grace to others. And I love this definition of joy that I got from this book called Untangling Emotions by Groves and Smith, two Christian psychologists, who say joy is a heart that treasures what God treasures and sees God's purpose advancing. These are the things that would help us. If we could experience these emotions, we might be able to live differently. And realizing God's grace makes the difference. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from the Father, James writes. Think about every good gift you have in your life. Every perfect thing about your life. And there are some things, I know, many of you will say, I don't have one thing perfect. Well, there are some perfect things. There are a lot of good things. Think about those good things that you have. Think of the job you have, the talent you have, the fact you were born in this country at this time. Think about the things that you can be grateful for. There could be a long list. They're all from God, James says. And as Luke wrote, this is one that's on my desk, framed. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. Paul gives some instructions to finish the work. He says, match your eager willingness to achieving it according to your means. How many of you have ever had great intentions to do something and never followed through on it? Okay, no hands. Okay, I can see your faces. All right. Okay. All of us have done that, right? I read an article in yesterday's paper about this great thing that 19 churches are doing where they've come together and they're pulling their money to give to people in need for health care, to pay bills. And immediately I thought, we could do something about that. I'm too tired. Match your eager willingness to achieve it according to your means. According to your means. Okay? None of us are going to have the billions of dollars, I don't think. If you do, you need to see me after the service. None of us have the billions of dollars that would allow us to set up big funds and foundations. But you know, we can start small. Match your eager willingness to achieving it according to your means. For if the willingness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what he does not have. The widow who put the 2 copper coins in was blessed by Christ and said that her gift meant more than the guys who were pouring bags of money in. Okay? Because of what the gift meant. What about us? What about us today? What behavior and teaching do we see that dishonors Christ and destroys people? And what do we do to address that behavior and that teaching? What false teachers and teaching distracts us, takes us away from the gospel of Jesus Christ? What do we think about equality? What do we really think about equality? Are we experiencing the joy of generous giving? Do we experience that joy, that unbridled experience of bliss that comes with giving? Or do we see giving as an obligation? I have to share with you, as a younger man, I would be in church and they'd pass the plate and I would reach into the small side of my wallet. Right? I have to put something in. I'll put a couple dollars in. Of course, in those days, it's all I had. but then I had this realization that God was expecting me to reach from the other side of my wallet. Not only my wallet, but my bank account and everything else. How might we follow Christ's example? Now, I'm not saying we all have to become homeless and rely on people to give us everything that we give. But how could we become more poor? How could we empty ourselves of some of our belongings, our wealth, so that others might live better? So, the way I see it, we have 4 things that are unfinished work here at Hempfield Church of the Brethren. The first is to love one another. That's unfinished. We still need to work on that. Remember, not to love one another so that everybody in the world loves one another, but according to our means that we love one another. We love who we can love. That we may be brought to complete unity. That's unfinished work. And the more and more I read about the churches, we're dividing more over different issues. And the churches that are dividing right now, they'll divide later over other issues until there's churches of one people, right? One person. Going to all the world is unfinished work. I think last month I shared with you the statistic that Christianity in the United States and North America, 9% of the population are Christians. 9%. And if that's the case, we need to go into the United States. Africa and South America and China are sending missionaries to the United States right now. And God gave us the ministry of reconciliation as Christ's ambassadors. That's unfinished work. We can love one another. We can be brought to complete unity. We can go into all the world and we can be ministers of reconciliation as Christ's ambassadors. God's grace flows through us, brothers and sisters. This is a tremendous congregation. Think about the Christmas love offering that we just took. Typically, a Christmas love offering, Dave tells me, is $7,000. So Dave came up, you might remember, and gave us this big stretch goal of $12,000 to build one well in Haiti. One well in Haiti. What do we do? $24,500. God's grace flows through us. Building projects. God continues to bless us in this way. Now, I wasn't here, but I know Galen and some of the older folks were. I wasn't here when this church was built, but I'm told it was a tremendous risk and an act of faith to sign that document that said we were going to pay off this loan and this building in 20 or 25 years. It was amazing. And you might remember that Pastor Pete Contra talked about the roof problem we had several years ago where we needed, I think it was $11,400 to fix the roof. And the building fund didn't have it at the time. And that week, somebody came in and said, hey, I just inherited some money. I'd like you to have it for whatever the church needs. And it was a check for $11,400. God shows up when we're faithful. He shows up. He gives us what we need. It wasn't a check for $15,000. It was a check for $11,400, right? Community needs. Think of all the community needs that we reach into. Think about TNT and the things that the youth are doing and the way we're reaching into the community. Think about the mission trip. Deb Fody, great example. Think about the Ethiopian church. You might not remember this or know about it, but there was an Ethiopian church that started in our chapel years ago. And they had church service after this service every Sunday. And one day they decided they wanted to leave and go out and buy their own building. And they wanted to buy a building in Salunga. And this building in Salunga, they needed a $10,000 down payment. And these were all Nigerian refugees. So they didn't have $10,000 among them. So there used to be a member here named Todd Wazotsky. And Todd called up people and said, we need to get these people, I need 10 people to pledge $1,000 each. And by the end of the day, he had $10,000 to give to the Ethiopian church. God's grace flows through us. And Brother Paul Neff, many of you don't even know who I'm talking about here, but Brother Paul Neff, he was a figurehead in the Church of the Brethren and in this congregation. Brother Paul Neff gave us a challenge that I remember when not long after we joined the church. He said, we should have 50% of our budget be outreach. That was a goal. That's unheard of. 50% outreach. And we've never gotten to 50%, but you know, we've gotten in the upper 30s. I think when you add up all the other things that people give that aren't part of our budgeting process, that aren't tracked, I think we're closer to 40. 40% of our giving supports outreach of this church. being the grace of God that flows through us. So what does it take to finish the work? Well, it takes those things we talked about. Faith, speech, knowledge, earnestness, enthusiasm, love, and grace. So let's finish the work. Let's find ways to share God's blessings with others. What blessings do you have that you could share with others? It doesn't have to be money, but it could be. Recognize the traps of rumors and false accusations, how they work against our faith, how they work against our ability to let God's grace flow through us. Practice humility, because we're all equal in God's eyes. Move from our sinful nature, let's go to the end of Galatians, anger, rage, other things. And let's look at the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And let's be stewards of God's blessings, loving God more than money, and using our life to support God's greater plan. Because if we do that, our lives are transformed and our whole view becomes different. So you might remember Larry Burkett. Larry Burkett was a Christian financial advisor who used to have a radio show on when I was first coming back to the faith, when I was born again. And I remember one day I was driving down the road and Larry Burkett says, "I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is we have enough money to finish the Great Commission. The bad news, it's in your bank account." Larry Burkett says, "How we use our money is the clearest outside indicator of what we truly believe. If someone is a true disciple of Jesus Christ, the evidence will be found in that person's everyday life, including his or her use of money." Think about that. So I want to leave you with one other quote that's on my desk framed. And it comes from 2 Corinthians 9. Now I know this is 2 Corinthians 8, so 2 Corinthians 9 is next, but Lent comes in between. So I'm going to do this, figuring you'll forget it by the time Doug preaches this. After Easter, okay? "Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of the Lord's people, but is also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. Because of the service by which you have proved yourselves, others will praise God for the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel of Christ and for your generosity in sharing with them and with everyone else. And in their prayers for you, their hearts will go out to you because of the surpassing grace God has given you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift." Thanks be to God for the indescribable gift he has given to each one of us as we sit here today. Amen.
We hope the message you've just heard has brought you closer to Jesus. If it has, or if you'd like to learn more about God or about his word, the Bible, we would love to hear from you. You can call us at area code 717-898-0181. Or you can email us at office@hemfieldcob.org. If you happen to be in the Lancaster or Manheim area, we'd love to have you join us for worship on Sunday mornings. You can find details and directions at hemfieldcob.org. And now, from all of us at Hemfield Church of the Brethren, we'd just like to wish you and yours a wonderful and blessed week. The music in this recording has been graciously provided by and performed by Kevin McLeod, www.incompetech.com.